This is Susie Thorpe on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now I've got Rick Thompson. He is the CEO of Find a Cure Charity. It's all about rare diseases. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Susie.
Very nice to have you here. Really important subject. It affects quite a lot of people. And what is the charity about? Let's start with that first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. So Find a Cure is a charity that's really all about helping individuals and groups that represent people living with rare and ultra rare conditions and trying to find ways to help them to meet other people who have same life experiences and to really make the most of their power, if you like, to change their situation. These are conditions that people just know nothing about, and you get that rare diagnosis eventually and you have nowhere to turn, no idea of what's going to be ahead for you, and often no treatment. And we really believe that the patients themselves can come together and make a difference in that situation.
Because the majority of people that have any symptoms just wait for it to go, don't they?
Absolutely.
Not realising that sometimes you need to talk, you need to sort of identify and talk to other people, mm-hmm. and then you can suddenly feel better about something if you get help.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think with a lot of the conditions we're talking about, they might start with that type of symptom, you know, things that you're not quite sure are happening. And actually with rare conditions, many of them are genetic. So you're actually talking about symptoms you'll see in children. About 80% of these conditions are affecting kids. So parents might notice something that's subtly off. And I think there's always that compulsion to go and seek that medical advice. But what you find with these really rare things is you have symptoms that make no sense, that doctors just don't get. And you get passed from clinician to clinician, centre to centre. And that worry can really build and grow, and you never really get a full understanding of what's going on.
I mean, that is really interesting, isn't it, that the doctor can't even identify. Not dissing the doctors at all, but it's something that they've never come across.
Absolutely.
Or it sort of has a knock-on effect from something else that they've had. And it is fascinating. At the same time, it's probably really, really awful for the person suffering.
Deeply
so
terrifying.
What made this charity start? Why did this charity start, and how long?
So one of our co-founders, Nick Sereau, his two children have a rare condition called alkaptonuria. So he worked to help to form a patient group for that specific condition, and went out there trying to find other patients with that condition and trying to do something about it, basically trying to find a way to develop a new treatment for that. And Nick was, you know, exceptionally successful in his role with the AKU Society, and they're actually at a stage now where they've been involved in a full clinical trial for a new treatment. And what Nick found was loads of other patients and patient groups were calling him and just asking how he did what he did. They didn't have a central point to come to ask for advice about how to form a charity, how to find patients, how to get involved with research or clinical trials. And so a big part of our reason for existence was to be that port of call, to help those groups to have someone to ask, to support them and to help them grow so they can have a real big impact in their condition.
I suppose one of the questions I want to ask you really is, what makes a certain disease so rare? How do you identify something? Because it hasn't been talked about, or because you know about it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there's a specific definition we use in the EU, which is just about prevalence, you know, simply that a disease that affects fewer than 1 in 2,000 of the general population will be the definition of something that's rare. But actually, if you look more closely at these conditions, many are as rare as 1 in 2 million. So the commonalities often come around the isolation, the fact that patients are told when they finally get the diagnosis they may never meet anyone else with that condition, and that there may be no form of treatment. And they often are therefore isolated on themselves to cope with what can be really shocking symptoms or very hidden symptoms, and struggling to find anyone who can understand that.
And in this day and age, because of the internet, we are constantly looking on the internet to find it. And if you can't find anything to relate to, it really compounds it, doesn't it, for you?
Absolutely. I mean, Dr. Google is a phrase that people use a lot in the area. And that is the first thing patients do. They get a diagnosis. If they're lucky, they'll get an A4 sheet and they will go off and Google it. And you can find some horrific things using Google, which can really terrify people. And if that first hit on Google is Wikipedia, you get one situation, which is often quite freaky. If you get a first hit of a patient organisation or a charity that represents this condition, you instantly have access to people who have lived experience of the disease. Not the statistics, but they can tell you actually what life might pan out, how variable these diseases can be, and provide you with some actual tangible support of how to live with it and how to find clinicians who might know something about the condition.
Sounds a fascinating charity, it really does. So we've talked about how you help other patients literally learn to live with it and to talk to other people. But what other aspect to the charity do you find that's really changed as you've started the charity? What other extra things do you actually give?
It's a really good question. Focus for us is always about helping these groups to grow. And we try and run projects that can help like match them up with people, can help train them to help them work through those problems and experiences, which is really enjoyable to see. So we often have pairings in our peer mentoring scheme, a year-long program, and you see these groups go from a mum who's just passionate about making a difference for their kid to actually someone who's set up a charity, built a website, found researchers and is actually now leading something that will make a difference in that area. And that's something that's amazing to see and really rewarding.
The website and internet for you connecting people must make a huge difference, because 25 years ago it would have been really hard slog to communicate this, but having your website, it's just the go-to for everyone now, isn't it?
It's transformed things in this area. It really has. I think since social media and the internet has become so powerful, it's allowed these patients to connect around the world. There are people, you know, in Cambridge making friends with people with the same condition in Australia. And that connection, however far away it is, can make a huge impact on their life.
Wow, that is really interesting.
Yeah, and it's fantastic, the stories you can hear from there. And I think the idea of connection is crucial. So another thing we've started to do more of is recognise that these patient groups can really make a difference. They can do what AKU Society have done and get involved and start research, but they can't do it on their own. And they do need connections with people in the life sciences sector, with doctors, with pharmaceutical companies, with researchers, to try and really help them move those things forward in a practical way that will ultimately deliver the treatments that the patients are looking for.
And going on to this is a follow-on, isn't it, from all the new aspects to the charity. You've got a showcase in August. What's that all about?
Well, it's about just that. We run events where we try and bring that diverse community together. We want to put patient groups and patient representatives in a room with those researchers, with people who work in life sciences, with clinicians, so they can talk to each other and share stories. So we're running a Cambridge Rare Disease Showcase, which is going to be on the 8th of August here at Espresso Library on East Road. And hopefully in that room we'll have some local people from Cambridge who work in businesses, people who live with rare conditions, people who treat people with rare conditions. And we'll have a series of talks proposed by those people in the room, who get 5 minutes to take the stage and tell us about what they're doing, and just really highlight the fantastic work that is happening in the city with regard to rare disease treatments and patients.
And patients' experience feedback from them, I suppose that's been really important as well. What's been the feedback from that?
It's been really interesting. You always just come across someone who says, oh, that last time we did that showcase, I met this guy, and now we're talking about a collaboration. We're working on a new project with, you know, a clinician in Adam Brooks, and you never know what will come from it. And it's just giving people opportunities, and that's something we're really keen to do. And actually trying to highlight the positive stories in this space. People are doing some amazing work, and it can be easy to feel burdened down sometimes with the situation, which is really tough if you're living with a rare condition. But there are a lot of positive things happening out there across that diverse community to try and make a difference. And the showcases are hopefully helping to celebrate that and start new things.
Yeah, because anybody coming back from a holiday could suddenly have some sort of tick bite or something else that's not rare. Of course, tick bites are definitely not rare. They're becoming much more... they're very, very often now.
Absolutely.
That it happens,
and
we have to watch for that. So, but it was rare about 20 years ago, but now it's... But when people come up to you and you can either say it's rare or you can literally put them in another direction, but you want them to be able to approach you, don't you?
Absolutely.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, we want to try and help signpost people to the people who can help them best. And whether that is another patient organisation specific to their condition, whether it might be we have an idea of a company that might be able to help them with their problems, or it might be a doctor we know in the area, that's a thing. But even on tick bites, the ticks often carry Lyme disease, and that's a condition which is becoming more frequent, but it's on the verge of rarity and can have absolutely devastating impacts on the life of an individual. And we actually had someone speaking about that at an event we ran in Glasgow, I believe, last year. And the story that she went through, a young individual, young woman on the verge of going to university and just became bedridden for 2 years. It's absolutely devastating.
Wow.
And how people recover from that and move on. And she's now, you know, really heavily involved in awareness, has written a book about this condition to try and help others. And that's the kind of thing we want to capture.
Talking of rare diseases, obviously no names mentioned and you don't even do gender, but what has been what has surprised you? Has something in particular surprised you about a particular disease that you had really not heard of before or anything that...
Wow.
Yeah, where do you start?
I mean, in terms of the patient stories or in terms of the symptoms? I mean,
symptoms, really, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are like 7,000 plus rare diseases out there. We're talking about an extreme diversity, and you can have things that are deeply shocking to see and things that are completely hidden. So an example might be fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva. Horrible name, we'll call it FOP. But it's better known as Stoneman syndrome, and this is ultra rare. About 1 in 2 million people have this, thankfully. Mm. It is a genetic condition, but what basically happens in these individuals is from birth they have a defect that means whenever they get soft tissue damage, part of the healing process leads to bone forming around that damage.
Wow.
So as they're getting older and experiencing more issues, bruising, knocks, bashes, they're getting little bits of bone growing in their tissue, and that forms continuously. It doesn't break down, so gradually sheets of bone form. They can limit movement and gradually constrain people, so they literally become a stone man. They cannot move, and ultimately this will lead to death because they can't breathe.
And when you say 1 to 2 million, that's in the UK?
1 in 2 million people worldwide experience this. Yeah.
I mean, that's tiny, isn't it?
It is, but I mean...
Gosh, that's incredible.
It's absolutely terrifying, and it's one of those conditions you see and you can't believe.
I don't want to belittle that it was only 2 million, but that makes it a rare disease, basically.
Oh, really?
And that makes it equally as important, because...
I think you've got to imagine you have that. Mm. You know, you've got... This is the ultimate problem. Who do you turn to? How do you get anyone who can understand what you're going through? Mm. And how can someone do something about it when it affects so few? And luckily, in this condition, you know, there is a big research effort trying to drive things forward, but it hasn't yet delivered treatment. So these people have to live a very challenging life, and you know, I haven't happened to meet anyone with FOP myself, but you see stories of some exceptionally brave and impressive people going out there and living
and
as they can.
As we mentioned before, having the internet, if I mean, I don't know how many people that have suffer from that in the UK, but now that you have the whole world on a screen, it's fantastic, isn't it? It's so important to be able to connect.
Completely.
You wouldn't be able to have done that 20 years ago.
No.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much. Rick Thompson from Find a Cure Charity.